You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. We always talk with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. I've had a very busy day, Mike. I was in Springfield this morning at the first Corn and Soybean Classic Series for the year. That, of course, should have been the third one, but we didn't manage to get out on Monday or Tuesday because of the cold weather. What a difference a few days makes, not only in the weather, Mike, but also in what's been happening in the marketplace to do as well. The USDA reports were due out at 11 o'clock this morning. Why don't you go through those numbers for me, please?
Well, I think the big numbers were probably the U.S. ending stocks, Todd. We came in with a surprise to the downside in terms of supply, obviously, with the corn of 1.63 billion bushels. That's versus just under 1.8 last month. Wheat ending stocks bigger than trade estimates, bigger than the highest trade estimate as well, 608 million bushels last month had been 575 million. Beans a little bit more neutral, 150 million bushels posted today versus 150 last month. And that is pretty much on the upper end of the trade guesses. When you break down the 22 estimates by Reuters, it was right in the upper middle part of the range for the U.S. numbers. Global stocks numbers were quite a bit different. We had a much bigger wheat number, a little bit bigger bean number, and a bit smaller, quite a bit smaller corn number as well. Interesting in the wheat and corn feed numbers, big distinctions there. Feeding in the United States and the world for corn went up on USDA's report at the expense of U.S. wheat feeding and global wheat feeding going down in the report today. So those are kind of the highlights. The grain stocks report, mostly friendly for the corn, neutral for the beans, neutral, mostly neutral to maybe a little bit weaker for the wheat as well.
We took it on the chin at least for a while today, and they did post in the nearby contract a pretty sharp outside down month. July futures were down but did not manage to post an outside down. Which of these commodities did you spend most of the time looking at after the fact, trying to analyze just what happened to it?
Well, I think most of the calls came after the report because of the corn, with clients wondering how high the corn could move and whether this was a low in the corn market, and it was it time to go ahead and sell some cash corn or buy back some of the light sales that have been made here during the month of December, or last month, I guess it was, during December. And so I think we focused mostly on the corn. The wheat and the corn continue to be attached. It's funny, in this post-report environment after the close, I was just sitting here and I had two questions pop in my mind, and it's kind of similar to last month's report, Todd. How high could the corn have moved had it not been for the bearish wheat number, and how low could wheat have taken the corn had it not been for the friendly corn number? And so these two futures markets continue to work with each other, and in the case of the numbers today, work against each other. But if you're going to get a substantial rally in the corn futures, I think you still need the wheat on your side.
So you don't have the wheat on your side at the moment, though, right?
You do not have the wheat on your side. The one thing that I will say is that the planting numbers, the winter wheat seedings number, was not negative at all, just under 41.9 million acres total. Trade estimates averaged 43.5. Some had it up to 44.5. Big decline versus last year in soft red wheat. So that could be potentially more corn acres, but maybe that's down the road here in another couple weeks or a month or so before the trade starts to think about that. But I think the winter wheat acres and the seedings report today maybe could be a launch pad or a jumping off point for trying to carve out a low in the wheat market. We did get news after the market closed that Egypt is in tendering for U.S. wheat and also a combination of U.S. and other wheat. That's always kind of a nice thing to see after a report comes out.
Let's go through the supply-demand tables in particular. We'll start with the corn, where they adjusted for the old crop corn, harvested acres, and the yield. Harvested acres went up and yield went down.
Yes, and I think this is where, you know, as an analyst that has been talking about the difference between the Western Corn Belt and the Eastern Corn Belt, not only did I have a monkey on my back, but I had Godzilla and King Kong on my back, and I didn't have much faith that the USDA would come in and lower the ending stocks down to levels that made sense to me. And so I do think USDA did see the distinction between the Western and Eastern Corn Belt, because they also put some new records, new fresh record yields posted today versus December. in the report as well in the Eastern Corn Belt. So to take the yield from 160.4 down to 158.8, I believe it was, it did take quite a bit of yield decline in the Western Corn Belt. So that, along with the feed demand and the ethanol demand increase totaling 150 million bushels, essentially took the trade from thinking we had a 2 billion bushel corn crop, expecting that at the end of today, down to a 1.6. So you've got about 400 million bushels the trade's off on at this point, as far as how I see it and what I talked to with people in Chicago after the report came out.
Well, it changed a couple of things beyond that. So let's start with this beginning stocks number, because it didn't change very much. Harvested acres changed, yield changed, but beginning stocks went from 824 to 821, so they didn't really change too much there. Total production for the year went from 13,989 to 13.925 billion.
Yes, that's right. And so you didn't get a lot of change when it came to the actual production, because you had 500,000 acres increased in harvested acres. But I think it does point to the idea that, A, we did have some yield problems in the West because they posted record yields in the Eastern Corn Belt. So you could have seen that 160.4 go up to 161 or 161.5 had it not been for some declines in the West. And I think, again, we are seeing with the feeding and the ethanol that these low prices are really stimulating demand, and I think that that's what really boiled down, because of what you talk about in the actual production and beginning stocks figures, not much change, but by the time you drill down through the numbers, quite a bit of difference.
Well, it may have done some stimulating, but feed and ethanol up 50 million, but feed and residual, what did they do there?
They went up 100 million,
so you think that's right?
Yeah, I do, because they took it out of the wheat, and I think we were running pretty hard on the wheat. And I would also say that the hog producers out there and the poultry producers out there are feeling pretty good. Other than PED virus, they're feeling pretty good about the future. And so I do think, given the sow prices, given the feeder pig prices, we do have increasing feed at this point.
And the export market for corn?
Well, the last 2 weeks have been dismal, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. And so you really want to get back to a pre-holiday type pace, and you want to try and get away from the GMO corn issue with the other buyers out there, so we don't have to rely upon as much China. And certainly USDA did juggle the numbers today and take Chinese corn production up, took their imports down 2 million. I want to think that that's mostly pounded into the numbers here because of this GMO corn issue that we've been fighting for, what, now 3 weeks. So I think the big battle with corn futures will continue to be the wheat market. And yet, by the same token, these ending stocks numbers and these grain stocks numbers maybe make the Argentine weather more important next week when we come back.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzalos with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting joins us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.